When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Beating Tetris is our life goal. It's VGC, a video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Pete Donaldson, and Andy Robinson. This week, our predictions for 2024 in gaming and a small smattering of news. But first, how are we doing, folks? Pete, you look like a new man with that shaved bum of yours.
Yeah, I, for various reasons, decided to shave my moustache off. It doesn't look great. I don't like it, and I would like it back, please. Whoever stole my moustache, I'm going to go down the back of the sink and start taping, super gluing the hair back to my face. Yeah, it's not a great look. I'm going to see Jordan. I'm a mess. I'm entering 2024 how I left 2023, a dribbling, ugly little orc of a boy.
I don't know. I think it takes years off you. Yeah. I mean, you weren't a particularly old looking fella beforehand, but you're. You look like your promo shots from like 10 years ago now.
me and Ian Wright at Absolute Radio doing tricks with a football.
Andy, when are you shaving off your facial hair and
never,
going back to
never,
your
body? It'll come off the next time I'm happy, which since I'm 4 days into dry January, is some weeks away.
I was thinking about doing a dry January, but obviously alcohol is not my tipple. It is the glory of the majesty that is Monster. And I've cut back. I only drink them while I'm working now, so it's a new dawn.
The hardest thing about dry January is any football games that come up. I went the other day. Driving to the football is weird, and then being at the football with, especially where I am now, I get like a free drinks voucher, and when you're in a world of like £8 pints, you're not wasting your free drinks voucher on a Fanta. So I've got them stashed somewhere.
Put a Twix in a glass of Bovril, please.
I had a Bovril, yeah.
A Bovril, that's all right, that's fine.
Like a man just shaking and quivering with his Bovril, trying to pretend it's giving him a buzz.
The way you started that story, I thought you were going to be like, you know, it's weird driving to the football without a drink in me, you know? It's weird.
I would say, Andy, the match I believe you watched was the goalless draw between West Ham and Brighton.
Yeah, I
not one for the
beer,
purists or even the casuals.
It was definitely a drinker's game, that one.
Yeah, it was the football over the festive period was interesting. Celtic beat Rangers, let me just put that on the record, but we played terribly, as we have been doing recently. So, brother Brendy's at the wheel.
Yeah.
It is the season for terrible football. Pete, your Newcastle United are going to finish in, what, 25th at this point if they don't stop conceding 5 goals a game?
Honestly, Jordan, I just want to get through this Sunderland test, and I am calling it a test. There's no upside to playing Sunderland in the state we're in at the moment. No upside. Yeah.
You're not going to go? With a hatchet or something?
No, I'm not. No, not in the Stadium of Light. I've dirtied my feet for the last time in that stadium.
I read yesterday, the Geordies have actually been banned from all public transport. Going to that game. I'm not joking. They've been bubbled. It's one of those rare games where is deemed so
high,
exactly so high that you actually can't travel there unless the police escort you.
Yeah, well, they've sort of started selling, and you know, obviously this is a video game podcast, but they've started selling a lot of moving Stadium of Light Sunderland season ticket holders just so they can accommodate the more moneyed Newcastle kind of corporate clients, which I imagine goes down really well with the Mackhams. Wow. What hubris.
Well, more on this on Stack's Celtic podcast, which is launching in 2024. Look forward to that. Hail, hail indeed. We've got a little smattering, a little fart of news as the year gets started. A lot of people seem to have not actually started work again. The lazy
bastards. I certainly haven't.
Yeah. Story number one. Switch 2, quote, likely to be iteration rather than revolution, predicts analyst. That's according to Dr. Serkan Toto, the CEO of Tokyo-based game industry consultancy Catan Games, who contributed his forecast for 2024 in gamesindustry.biz's annual analyst prediction feature. Although the company has yet to comment publicly, Nintendo's next-generation console is widely expected to launch this year after VGC reported that development kits are already in the hands of developers as the platform holder prepares its plans. According to Catan Games Toto, the console could cost between $400, which is $100 higher than the Switch launched at, and there's a chance that games could adopt the $70 price model of PS5 and Xbox Series X. As far as I'm aware, Andy, the only Switch game that got the $70 was Tears of the Kingdom, is that true?
That's right, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so they didn't quite go over to that that price last gen. Quote, the time is finally here for a Switch successor, even though I can say a pro model actually did exist and certain developers were already working with the dev kit. I believe that the next hardware will drop in 2024 for $400. There's a high chance that the games will cost more too. He goes on to say this next system is also likely to be an iteration rather than a revolution. Nintendo might add some bells and whistles to the device, but it will be similar to the current Switch. Andy, people seem to take this as quite a surprise, but if you look at the history of Nintendo's consoles, they do a lot of iteration. You go Wii to Wii U. Obviously that wasn't massively successful, but you think of like the DS to 3DS, the Game Boy to Game Boy Advance. Was this kind of what you were expecting, especially with the success of this?
Well, I think probably first of all, hello Dr. Toto. I believe he's a listener. So welcome. I think it's probably more the last kind of 10-15 years Nintendo have been particularly disruptive, right? We've going like yeah. We've obviously the Wii and the DS and the Wii U and then to the Switch. It's been a little while outside of probably even like DS to 3DS maybe, but even that, you know, the 3D at the time seemed like a big innovation. It's been a while since I guess they've just done that more iterative approach, but I guess it's also been a while since they've not shit the bed after they've had a big success, right? Sometimes innovation is forced upon you, I suppose. But obviously coming off what looks like it could be their most successful console ever, it would kind of make sense that they kind of take a little bit more of a safety first approach, right? I mean, that's probably playing it down as well. Like Nintendo and any platform holder, well, perhaps not Xbox, but certainly Sony and Nintendo, they always have a gimmick, right? Like that they sell it on. I mean, 3D on the 3DS died pretty quickly, but still it was like, oh, we all need to try that. Like it's 3D without the glasses. Like, oh, that's
no, thank you. Just slide that right down.
Yeah. But it's again, like, I mean, the stuff on the PS5 as well, right? Got the DualSense and, oh, you got to try it. And then very quick, no one's ever kind of matched the potential for that. No one's matched the very first game, Astrobot, right? They just have not. You know, Joy-Cons on Switch, like the launch game, oh, the HD Rumble and the two player, you know, on one console, and they ditched, you know, no one really used that properly.
All of the little kind of like gyroscopy stuff was so well reviewed as well. It's kind of, you can feel every little, like there's little balls inside that you can feel it so, and nobody cares.
Those features and like the PS5 as well, and every PS5 reviewers like myself and Andy harp on about the controller because we're drawn to things that are the newest, hottest thing. Yeah. But that's never the thing that actually lasts to the end of a generation.
That's the thing that makes people like us buy it first. And that's we are the people who buy it first, the early adopters. And you kind of need that gimmick. So 100%, no way is this thing turning up and it's just Switch 2, right? And it's a bit more powerful and it's got some new buttons on it. No way. It's going to have a gimmick 100%.
However,
I think what Dr. Toto is saying, and I would say that I know a lot of analysts just, you know, are guessing, right? But Dr. Toto is Tokyo based. He's embedded in the industry out there. I would argue that he's someone who's worth listening to on this topic, especially because a lot of the predictions that he made in this piece are also stuff that I've heard. So I would say that he's worth listening to. What I think he's getting at is that it's going to be the next evolution of the same concept, right? It's going to be a portable 100%. You're probably going to be able to dock it. But will it have Joy-Cons? Like, maybe not. Maybe they kind of get rid of that and they bring in a new idea. You know, we're all expecting it to be a little bit more powerful, maybe like PS4 Pro power is what's being banded about, especially if it has a more powerful CPU and some sort of DLSS style kind of AI upscaling, then it should be pretty nice in terms of power. But I just think it's very much going to be the next iteration of the Switch idea rather than, you know, like a something completely left field.
Yeah, and the Good Doctor also makes a good point saying, and because that it's Pokemon and Pokemon is associated with handheld gaming, there is no way on earth Nintendo will drop the portability feature for their next big thing. And I suppose that's it harkens to something Andy said either on the last podcast or two podcasts ago, I can't really remember, about how before the Switch came out, it was always, is this going to be a home console that you can take with you, or is this going to be a portable console that you can throw to your telly? And I think it will remain a portable console that you can throw to your telly, because Nintendo, in the home console market, there's no point competing there, because that's just not where they play.
Is it just going to be something like really underwhelming, like, you know, wireless HDMI or something, like just no wires, like, and you can just throw the footage to the television? I don't know. I'm just thinking that it might. I'm racking my brains. I mean, not as if like Joy-Cons and the whole kind of like setup that they had with the Switch that I can sort of think of. None of that was predicted, but I just don't think there's that much kind of, you know, it's kind of everything, all these innovations just kind of trailing off a little bit. I don't know what.
Yeah,
I don't know,
it's also
foldable. It's going to be foldable.
Yeah, maybe. It's also one of those things that's like, you can show off the Joy-Con stuff in like the advert where people are having a party on the roof, but if the gimmick for the Switch 2 is it has this cool DLSS feature, like look how it can replicate 4K, like that doesn't play to a rooftop party kind of situation. It also, I mean, the $1 billion question is, what does this mean for Switch backwards compatibility and how long the Switch will be supported afterwards? Because you assume that the big franchises are finished on Switch, but considering the sheer number of Switches, Andy, how long do you think they'll still try to...
They're still going to support Switch. They're still going to support Switch, right? Like, I mean, you only have to look at how long they supported 3DS after the Switch came out. I mean, it wasn't extremely long, but it was a couple of years. They had some greatest hits games coming out. You know, the sort of stuff that we're seeing at the end of this year, which is like HD ports and remasters and stuff like that. Like, it's the I say this in quotation marks, easier titles for them to produce, right? But I don't know. Backwards compatibility is a big question. I don't think anyone really knows, especially because that's something that they can, I mean, a lot of the leaks come from developer kits, right? As developer kits go out there, then naturally the more people know about it, then people are going to start talking about it. Whereas I think backwards compatibility comparatively is something that maybe they can keep more internal. I mean, obviously there'll be at a high level, publishers will know or be part of those conversations, but I mean, it seems myself and other journalists who have reported on this just hear conflicting things that, oh, it is going to be backwards compatible, but then maybe it isn't going to be backwards compatible at all. I mean, I heard some chat about, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, I had some chat about, there was some concern among some of the Japanese publishers about the like attach rate with PS5, like amount of game sales that are being, amount of games people are buying per console, because obviously this is unique, this generation, in that it's the first console you turned on, like you turn on your Xbox Series X or your PS5 and your game's already on there. Like, it was not a clean slate, right? Because PS4 and Xbox One was the gem where you built your digital library. And that's why Phil Spencer said it was the worst generation for them to lose. Because once you've got your digital library, you tend to stick with that, right? So people bought PS4, probably bought PS5 because all their games are on there.
Right,
and that naturally has led to fewer game sales per console, because in the early days, at least, because people turn it on and say, oh yeah, my Call of Duty's on there, my Fortnite's on there, you know, my service games, I'm happy. Whereas there is the argument that if there's any set of customers who are going to buy everything again, it's Nintendo fans. So I'm expecting it to be backwards compatible. I am. It's just, I don't want to fly my flag on it, especially with all the talk that usually you get some sort of sense about the direction they're going to go. Last time it was kind of like, I think in the inside baseball, it was kind of obvious that they were going to make Switch, like the console that they did, the hybrid console, because Nintendo were making strides to do that. They combined their handheld and their home console teams. They did that in the years up to it. So it was obvious what they were going to do, right? They're doing that for a reason. And now the chatter is all about the Nintendo accounts. They always bring it up in all their investor calls. The Nintendo accounts, the most important thing to them, keeping their audience. They don't want to reset the audience every time they transition, because that's been painful for Nintendo. because now things are rosy. But what happens is they bring out a new console and it's less successful, and then they hurt again. So they talk a lot of what does that mean, right? Your digital account. What that means is making it as seamless as possible to go to the next console. So that would kind of suggest exactly what I've just explained, that you get a new console and your games are on there and stuff. Mm. So I don't know. We'll see how it plays out.
Is it? Yeah. Would it be funny if, for whatever reason, some strange quirk of how they've kind of set up the dev kits and the new Switch 2 going forward, that wonky little sort of flash card that is apparently coming out that's imminent for the Switch somehow jailbreaks the new one as well? That would be problematic. Well, that's how they get in.
It didn't happen with 3DS.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the R4 card in DS was like a huge disaster for them. It was a disaster, right? Publishers literally stopped releasing their games on DS because piracy was so high. And you would have bet your house at the time, well, that means that you're not going to be able to put the cards into 3DS, but that wasn't the case at launch. So yeah, they'll find a way around that. But, I mean, I don't think it's particularly great news when that thing happens, because the consumers, it means that the publishers are going to release less games. Nintendo is going to come down and put even more strong restrictions on, you know, kind of normal users.
Yeah.
Well, we will see. Someone who probably knows what's going on with Switch 2 is Shigeru Miyamoto. Not too sure, but he might have an idea.
Too busy with theme parks, mate.
Yeah. Too busy hanging about with Kesa McDonald for the end of the show. Still no plans to retire, says the big man. Quote, more so, I'm thinking about the day I fall over. Speaking to The Guardian in a new interview, the director discussed his plans for the future, saying, in this day and age, you have to think about things in a 5-year time span. So I do think about who I can pass things on to in case something does happen. I'm really thankful that there's so much energy around things that I have worked on. These are things that have already gone out into the world. They've been cultivated by others. Other people have been raising them, helping them grow. So in that sense, I don't feel too much ownership over them anymore. Andy, surely there's a succession plan in place. Miyamoto, I mean, he's looking in rare health for 71, but he was also famous for smoking about 300 fags a day back in the day. So
yeah,
time catches up to all of us. What do you think? Do you think he's got a handpicked successor?
I think if you want to look at that happened 10 years ago. You know, like I mean, a few people would disagree that games, Nintendo's put out some phenomenal games in the last 10 years, right? Like, yeah. Quality has not dropped off.
Probably their best since the Super NES.
I don't think quality's dropped off at all, yeah. Like in their history. Mm. I really don't. And probably Miyamoto really started transitioning to younger creators like as far back as 10, 15 years ago. I mean, the last game, someone's going to correct me in the comments, I'm sure. I think the last game you directed was Super Mario 64. Mm. I might be wrong. Maybe it was Pikmin 1, but certainly you're not going past that. So you're going back 20 years, basically. More than 20 years in the case of Super Mario 64. I think when he was made a fellow, I don't know what year that was, but I think even at the time I remember thinking, well, this is in all but name, like a soft retirement. I mean, you look at the projects that he's involved in. He's not really hands-on with development anymore at all. He hasn't been for some time. He's a like supervising producer, so at high concept level, he'll give feedback. But this is his own, in his own words, he's not involved in the day to day. He takes from his recent interviews, it seems that he takes his enjoyment these days in having lots of different things to do and trying new things, and that's why he's been heavily involved in the Super Mario Brothers movie and the Nintendo World theme park and making those great. And I can see why, like, and you can see his fingerprints on those. So, you know, long may he continue.
Do companies and studios need like that kind of central figurehead these days? Obviously, are we kind of past that? Because I mean, obviously he's such a big figure for such a long time, and Nintendo have had, you know, two or three probably in their history that people...
Well, I'd say from a cynical point of view, if he wasn't there, their share price would bomb.
Right.
From a cynical point of view, yeah. Right? But maybe, you know, maybe he's, I know we're not used to people like executives at big companies telling the truth, but maybe he's telling the truth. Maybe he's like, I get to do lots of different stuff here and I don't want to retire. I'm happy. You know, I don't have to have the stress and crunch of having to put out a video game, you know, and work on these big all encompassing 5-year projects. I get to try new stuff and see new people. You know, maybe he's telling the truth. I think Japanese companies in particular have, you know, high retention rates, right? I mean, especially Nintendo. I think it was like 97% or something, plucking that figure out of the air. I seem to remember just no one leaves Nintendo because they look after their employees.
Mm. Yeah, you also, as a figurehead, he must be still such a draw for people that want to go and work there. Like, even if he's just, there's a funny bit in the interview where he was saying that one of his employees was interviewed and asked about his feedback process, and he just comes in and says, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad.
Yeah, he basically says it's very rare to ever hear any comment. I think but the Miyamoto behind the scenes is a bit more workman-like than the fun, happy chap that we see in public, as he has to be, right? All geniuses have to have high standards and enforce those, right? I mean, when I've been in Japan on my travels and met people who've worked with Mr. Miyamoto, a lot of the talk is about his standards and how, whenever I've asked, well, how come, say, for example, like the Fire Emblem games are like super iterative, or the Kirby games, you know, they just pump them out, right? Seems that they just put one out every year or every other year. Same with Pokemon. And yet we can't get an F-Zero, or we can't get a Star Fox. And the answer was because they're not Mr. Miyamoto's games. Those are Mr. Miyamoto's games, and he holds the standards. We're not pumping out a Star Fox this year. We're not pumping out another, you know, Zelda. There has to be a reason for one to be released, a new innovation. They need to be 10 out of 10.
Dogs. Give me a Nintendogs.
Nintendo, there's Nintendogs is a hugely nostalgic title for an era of folk that is yet to be capitalized on. The era that
Steel
is
made Diver.
Cozy games. Steel Diver. We need. Wasn't that 3DS launch game that most recent Steel Diver
really showed the 3D?
Pete, you mentioned figureheads. We are both wrestling boys, and we've seen the changes that have happened since one Vince McMahon has basically divested his creative control over the company and
grabbed it back,
and then seemingly since the TKO group, who own UFC and WWE, have came back into power, they have hoodwinked him into having basically no power whatsoever, and Triple H runs all the creative stuff, and it has been a substantial change. Obviously, people were complaining about the way he ran the company beforehand, but and kind of in a difference to how Nintendo is run now. Do you think that when Miyamoto shuffles off, it will not breathe new life into Nintendo, but will it be a moment for them to kind of reflect and say, where do we want to go now? Kind of thing.
I think companies, I feel a bit more confident with companies when they've got this kind of like centralized kind of figure or two or three people. I think Nintendo is such a, their products are very human, but the way that they seem to treat their fan base is rather inhuman at times. I just think that having like a figurehead just helps a little bit with that sort of stuff, and to have someone who can sort of talk with passion and compassion about, you know, just simple stuff like protecting one's IP and understanding how it all works in the global market, I think is so important. You know, I will say for one thing, since UFC have taken over, TKO have taken over WWE, the WrestleMe YouTube page has been very hard to administer. A lot of IP complaints kicking over, and our editor just spends most of the time just arguing the toss about fair use and fair dealing. So in many ways, they're very similar to Nintendo, because you can't do diddly squat with any of their stuff.
Oh, Andy, do you remember the old YouTube process for Nintendo, where you'd have to, if you wanted to make money off their content, you had to submit your video to them?
Really? Like,
you would have to make it public.
Oh, mate, I mean, if Chris Scullion was here, he'd tell you some real stories. I mean, working on the official Nintendo magazine, and obviously I'd be in the same room as them, you know, for years and years and years and years, and yeah, like, I mean, Pokemon Company is obviously by far the worst, but it's usually it's stuff like you go to Nintendo jail for changing the proportions of the characters on a spread. You've made that one slightly like bigger, so like you're in huge trouble if you do that. Huge trouble.
God, yeah. Imagine if Sega ever saw all that disgusting pornography they've got of Sonic the Hedgehog.
I mean you make a joke, but I was going to name them, is that you can see what happens when you drop Sega and Nintendo. Is that Sega's IP doesn't feel as special because they just never, it doesn't feel like they've had the same respect.
No.
I mean, okay, look, fans get to do loads of stuff, but at the same time, It's just a load of tripe everywhere.
Fans
right?
are idiots. Let's make this very clear. There's a lot. No one can be trusted with anyone's IP apart from the IP holder.
It's like when a new Star Fox eventually comes out, it'll be special, right? It'll be a special moment because they haven't allowed 50 million spiritual successors and knockoffs to go out in the years since, like Sega do.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but the Pokemon company is protective, but the fans find a way. The fans always find a way. Final story before our break, and it's the biggest news of 2024. The Xbox Series S toaster is finally here. After images first appeared a year ago, retail sleuth Wario64, who, sidebar, Andy, how many people do you think Wario64 is? Because there's no way it's one guy.
Give me a figurehead. Give me the Wario64.
He's one guy. I'm in his Discord. He's one guy.
I mean, it can't be one guy. It cannot be one guy.
It is indeed one man.
It's got to be a team. I am Wario64.
Although there is, he definitely has a team of guys who find deals and stuff. But he's one man, yeah.
Get him on the podcast. we would get him on the podcast and every 10 minutes he would be like, you can get COVID tests at Walmart for $17. You can get Kirby in the Forgotten Land for $20 on Amazon.
It's useless without the affiliate link, mate. Useless.
This toaster is going to be £40. The description is great. Achievement unlocked. Optimal carb experience. This appliance will take your kitchen countertop to the next level. The shade selector dial lets you toast your bread, English muffins, frozen waffles, and bagels exactly how you like them every time, anywhere from lightly toasted to dark. This is cool. More importantly, Pete, what colour do you like your toast?
Oh, I like it as close to being unpalatable as possible, as dark as it'll go before.
I agree.
Oh, really?
You start to smell issues. You I start agree. To smell the cancer. You're like, oh god, I've gone
no,
too far.
Bro. No, no, I like it to be just off white.
Oh, like a milky tea.
It's not toast then, is it?
Very slightly. It's like the
slightly
bread is hard
chewy.
And you just get, it's perfect. You get that. You get your butter, you go wild.
Oh,
it's
just, chewy toast.
That's
just soggy, wet kind of, would you not like, I mean, I would sort of say that I am a man who the only thing I have on toast is a very specific form of Marmite with truffle in it. There's truffle Marmite.
And that's I've been
looking
for that.
Sounds fancy. It's good stuff. I've had a jar on the go for about 2 years.
Is that like just
I don't think
in
it's
the
right
shops.
Anymore. I don't know where. You know Waitrose. What? It might have been Waitrose, actually.
It sounds like that does sound like Tory Marmite, doesn't it?
Yeah, massively. I remember. I remember the radio presenter Sean Keaveney, who I think did Six Music for a bit, and then slipped off to Globe. I think he when he's at XFM, he used to send me upstairs for like Marmite and toast and a fried egg. With as much Tabasco as I could handle on, like as I could just absolutely empty a bottle of Tabasco. And he went, hey, Peter, hurt me. And I just always think of every time I'm putting too much Marmite on a bit of toast, I'm like, hurt me. Anytime I work too hard to make it unpalatable and difficult.
See, I like toasted cheese with Frank's Red Hot on top of it. That's, that's the stuff.
The lovely,
so nice.
Refreshing energy.
It just gets caught right there, right in the old Adam's apple. And I was just like, this is going to ruin everything I eat for the rest of the day. It's wonderful. Wash it down with a big fat monster. Speaking of big fat monsters, we'll be back after this.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back, one and all. I hope you have your toast and Tory Marmite ready for our feature of the week, which is I don't know why I said that as if we do it every week. This is very much a one and done. You can't really do your predictions for the year in like March. We have come up with three predictions for the world of video games in 2024. We'll go around the table and see what we're going for and react to each other's predictions. I will begin. First prediction, Xbox will introduce an Xbox branded handheld in collaboration with ROG or someone else.
Oh, I like that, Jordan. I like that a lot, in fact.
The Game Pass, it looks it looks and runs very well on the ROG Ally already. So right. If they just wanted to put a wee Xbox shell around that, there are some people with AI profile pictures on Twitter that would go wild for that. So I think it's possible. Yeah. Andy, what do you think? Xbox entering the handheld market without actually having to spend money on doing that?
Yeah, what you mean is they're going to let someone else use their logo.
Yeah.
Which is basically what they already do.
The Breville.
If you mean something like a PlayStation Portal, yeah, I could see that. Peripherals make money.
Yeah, but this is more them not having, because Xbox is already a money pit, so this is them not having to actually spend money on it. They can just say, oh, we have a handheld too, but it's in a collaboration with people who are
I can see that. I can see that. Phil Spencer seems to love that kind of device as well. He's always allegedly, you know, playing on the go.
There's a lot of those kind of like
playing games.
There's a lot of those like white label kind of Chinese variants of the ROG Ally as well. So, I mean, there's loads of variants kicking around. You wouldn't have to necessarily spend all that money working with one of the bigger boys. You just sort of go, well, I'll just license that thing and stick Game Pass on it. Oh,
it's
I like
the biggest,
it.
The biggest downfall of the Steam Deck ecosystem that Game Pass doesn't work on it. Well, you can like stream it, but it doesn't work natively. But if they could get that going, that would be pretty cool. Andy, give me your prediction number one.
Mine are a bit boring. My prediction's the same as Dr. Toto's prediction.
Dr. Toto.
Switch 2 will launch this year and it'll be iterative. That's it. So I've pretty much already done mine because we talked about it at the top of the show. That's when it's going to have come out the end of this year. I think they'll reveal it in March. But again, this is my prediction, my speculation, before it's turned into a news story somewhere. And I think it will launch with a 3D Mario game. It might be Mario Odyssey 2.
Now we're talking.
Right.
And they'll have all of the big hitters announced. There'll be a Mario Kart. There'll be a Pokemon. There might even be a Smash Brothers by name. They will have every big franchise right up in front. And they'll have a game come out. This is what Nintendo do. It's not a bad guess. You know, they release a game every month. And their last couple of consoles, especially Switch. Switch was a success because they launched with every main franchise there in the first year. And they'll do the same for the next one.
I don't think that's a bad... The Pokemon show specifically, I think, was probably a good one because it won't be the next generation because they'll almost certainly, so the Pokemon generations are on three-year cycles, so that should be 2025. However, 2026 is a 30th year anniversary of the franchise, so they'll probably save the next big one for that. But they could do a remake easily, like they did Let's Go.
Yeah, it could be another Let's Go or something like that.
Yeah, oh, I'd love another Let's Go. Come on, man. I'm assigning one of the VGC maniacs to keep track of all this, become our official record keeper. It comes the position comes with no pay, but that's the same as all positions at VGC.
except for mine.
Yeah, except for yours. Pete, your first prediction.
I think the industry will adopt AI in development in the graphical sphere, and everyone will get over it really, really quickly. Like, ooh, surprisingly quickly. You know, now it's quite toxic. You know, obviously Xbox did a bit of artwork, some
were all the faces like that.
Where all the faces are all messed up and stuff, and there was wires going into a thing that wasn't really lit up and stuff. It didn't make any sense. I think the video companies will adopt it. I mean, obviously they will at some point, but I think it will be the first sphere in which it is more acceptable to do so, because so much of the development is about making the machine work smarter, I suppose. So I think it'll be a space that allows the rest of the creative arts to flirt with it a bit more, because at this moment in time it's incredibly toxic, but it does save
I think it's worth saying. I mean, there's a lot of like genuine legitimate uses for AI that are not cutting out people, right? It's just making people's jobs easier. I mean, a lot of a lot was made of the headlines this week of the Square Enix president, who said that they were going to I can't remember the exact phrase, but he said they were going to like extremely you know, lean into AI. Mm. But actually, if you look at the how they've used it, because they used it on Final Fantasy VII Remake, and they used it, for example, when they were writing the game. So this is something that I've done, right? So when I wrote the ukulele games, you're basically writing them in a spreadsheet, right? And you'll put stuff in there like, oh, the character has this, he's sad or he's happy. Like you'll put their mood in, so, and that will automatically assign, you know, the animation or the color of text on it, and this person speaking, and you put all that in the spreadsheet, right? Mm. For Final Fantasy VII Remake, they built a tool that automatically detected the tone of the voice of the right. voice actor and the words, and worked out what mood they're in, and changed the facial expression slightly. So the facial expressions were already animated, but it would like elevate them, improve them automatically with AI like that. And it did the same for the camera. It used that same data for the camera angles to like, oh, you might want to close up if they're like really, like it's a really dramatic moment or something like that, right? And also Xbox have just signed some agreement, and they talk. It's a similar thing about like NPC dialogue and things like that, where they're gonna use AI to help NPC dialogue, perhaps make it more apparent. You can't expect one writer to, you know, sit there and go forever in the games of these size. And also, that's a legitimate way to help make your game, because some of it is scientific, right? When you're designing a game, like you're writing dialogue. I mean, and I've done this, right? And the designers would have shouted at me at the time going, no, you need to be more clear. You need to keep saying, yeah, you need to go and press that switch. Oh, did you press the switch yet? You know, before your gags, you know, put your gags like somewhere else, right?
Put your gags away.
A lot of it is functional, and AI can do that job. It can tell you, look, you should be telling the player more to do this, to point them towards this content. And I think probably we should be talking about that more, that games are on the verge of being unsustainable now, AAA games. Like, you've seen how many layoffs there have been, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, they're making millions and millions, but it's fewer, bigger games are making, hovering up all the audience and making all the money, because they take 10 years to make now. And like Spider-Man 2, like, took like allegedly like $200-300 million to make, right? These games, you need to do something's got to give. You need to help these people who make these games. You need to help them, and AI I think can do that if it's done responsibly.
And bear in mind, like, AI's been used in games since the dot, like, but I just think our kind of understanding of what is acceptable AI, I think it's just like cutting the artists out of the deal, I suppose, isn't it? And obviously, using data sets that that have been taken from elsewhere, I suppose. That's the new.
You know, we're all totally against that, right? We're totally against any AI used for any kind of art, right? I mean, AI is, you know, we're in the firing line as well. You know what we do. AI is like coming for a lot of us, but I think artists in particular already weren't as valued as they should be. Within a lot of fields, and I think they should be protected from AI.
Yep. Well, that got very serious. Good points made all round. My second one, Jim Ryan will return to PlayStation. No. My second prediction: PlayStation will announce a large acquisition. That's the fun part of the prediction. The punt, Square Enix. I think it's time. I think they do it. I think they end up being, they're already functionally the exclusive home of Final Fantasy. So I think they announce an acquisition of Square Enix, and they come out and go, oh, don't worry, Xbox, you can still have Final Fantasy 14. don't worry about it, Hen. But see all these games that were already exclusive to us? We're keeping them. And I would maybe put the caveat that they still put the weird the stuff that only goes Switch. Do they still do that stuff? Like your kind of super serious RPGs. But Andy, this is the prediction that shall not die. A couple of years ago, there was knockings on the door that people were pretty sure this was happening, kind of in the backstage in the kayfabe realm. So what do you think about that?
What were they saying? There were rumors that it was happening.
Yeah, a few years ago there was chat. There was people that would know sent messages to people on this podcast we know here that made me very convinced that it was happening. But
what were they saying?
That PlayStation was. This is not a story. to do the Andy Robinson disclaimer. This is not a story. But there was messages a few years ago that saying that. That the Square acquisition was happening, and was happening enough that it seemed that
I from the gist that I get of it, on the Square situation. I know there are way bigger Square experts than me working in the media, but I understood that obviously they've changed CEOs in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And from my loose understanding, the new guy, the old guy made all the exclusivity deals, and the new guy is now basically that's a mistake. We need to be on everything. I mean, obviously you have to look, like, one of the first things he's done is gone on stage with Phil Spencer and announced Final Fantasy 14 for Xbox. I mean, I might be wrong, but
I swear.
If that was ever happening, then I'd say, yeah, maybe I'm not the last guy. But from my loose understanding, the newer guy seems to be more about, we need to be more like Capcom. Because Capcom are the most successful third-party games developer in Japan by far. And when's the last time Capcom did an exclusive game? I mean, you could say maybe Monster Hunter Rise on Switch, right? I don't think that counts. I don't think that's a timed deal, right? That's more like... Because Monster Hunter Rise is like the other Monster Hunter. You know, Monster Hunter World's the big boy one on the big, powerful consoles. And then they did Rise for the lesser ones. And then it's more like, makes good business sense to like port it some other time. But when was the last time that they Resident Evil 4 is only on, you know, PlayStation, right? That would have been an easy deal. Right? You know what I mean? Like, Square Enix would have done that deal.
Oh, yeah.
Resident Evil 4 would have been. But then they would have sold less.
Yeah. And I suppose that is the argument that Square... is quite PlayStation are obviously funded Final Fantasy at this point, like the main series, so they're quite happy to just maybe maintain that. But it's the acquisition wars have yet to die, but we'll see. Hello to Reset Era. Andy, prediction number two.
Jim Ryan's replacement will be worse.
Welcome back, Mr. Don Matrick. Here we go.
I think it could be Don Matrick-esque. There are PlayStation are at the peak of their hubris right now, right?
Yeah.
They have not engaged properly with their fans since before the PS5 came out. They don't intended to attend an E3 when it existed or it was going to exist. For more than 5-6 years, right? They are by far, PS5's been a runaway success, right? It's outsold Xbox by multiple times in the last year. They cannot sell enough of them. They're going to break records for the amount of PS5s. They're being rewarded for their hubris, right? They've been playing it relatively very safe. You know, Jim Ryan's business plan towards the end was very much the low-hanging fruit. Let's make more live service games, expand into PC and mobile. That's how you make more money. I could have done that, right? Pushing down on the skills and the expertise of Mr. Ryan. But I just also during that time, PlayStation has centralized in the US, gutted off all their teams everywhere else. It's very much it is run out of the US, right? You can say a lot of the US press like to say about how, well, there's a British man in charge and there's a Dutch man in charge of studios and whatever. They're run out of the US, right?
Yeah.
So this is going to be the first big opportunity for the US to put their man in. I predict it's going to be some marketing dude from PlayStation. And I think a lot of negative stuff has been said about Jim in a lot of fan circles. He's not hugely popular. I don't think he was hugely popular. Probably because he played it safe, right? Because they closed like Japan Studio and things like that. A lot of the niche, more colorful parts of PlayStation that we all loved. But he's also a hugely experienced company man. He was there from the very start, right? Whenever I've been to PlayStation, to SCE in the UK, in London, you know, you see Jim Ryan walking around, you know, like he turns up to people's leaving dues and stuff like that. Like, he's a proper PlayStation man. He gets it.
Yeah.
I have serious reservations on whether they're going to replace him with someone who has that. I think it's going to be a bit more of a cynical appointment, and maybe I'm not being fair, but it's just the vibe I get from, you know, the how things have been going. It's PlayStation's become very mechanical, right? Very machine-like in how they operate. And it's been doing wonderful for them. They're better. PlayStation's doing better than it's ever done, right?
Maybe they'll hand it over to an AI man. Just hand it over to AI.
I've just got the horrible feeling that everyone who didn't, the people who Jim Ryan wasn't popular with, they're now going to find out.
Fuck around and find out.
That's the way the wind's blowing.
Bring back Andy House. Pete, your next prediction.
I think with the video game that you won't remember, Jordan, Flashback. I mean, you do remember it because it was a bit of a classic. But Another World and Flashback were two games by a company called Delphine Software. They released the back end of this year, Flashback 2, It was atrocious. It came with like a collector's edition with the main guy in his leather jacket shooting a gun. It was atrocious. It was terrible. It was awful. I think IGN went with the leader, Corrupted Memory. Awful, awful game. But I think Delphine Software will return. The company who made that, Cruise for Cops, a game I was playing over Christmas, trying to get it finished, and Operation Stealth, which I enjoyed as well. So I think Delphine Software, the French developer from that went bankrupt in 2004, will be back in Paris, France.
Honestly, Pete, sometimes like you often say, you said on Look and Pete, the Look and Pete show, another Fine Stack production months ago, that was like, oh, the VGC guys are really hardcore in their games and stuff like that. And then I listen to you talk about some of these games you sit and play. I completed the Blongity Bling. It was brilliant. I was on holiday for a week, and I just spent the entire time sitting out on the balcony playing my Steam Deck,
playing Bunkity Bunk.
Commos of Vegas. It's like the knowledge runs deep. Like
I just want to achieve Chris Scullion. That's what I just want to be, Chris. I tell you what, if Chris Scullion isn't the number one top streamer of Kick or Twitch this time next year, I'll be bloody annoyed, because I very much enjoyed his Christmas streams where it was just him. He can't defend himself, but I find Chris a very steady, relaxing presence, and I really enjoyed his streaming style, and he was streaming a Shrek kart racer, which I very much enjoyed.
They turn his VGC video reviews on to like just go to sleep to.
Yeah,
the Pokemon one specifically is like, hello there.
But that makes it sound soporific. That makes it sound like, you know, the same way that I've watched The Wiggles in the past, just to sort of like nod off the kids' TV show. Like, it's not asinine. Like, I genuinely enjoy his work, as I should do. He's very good. But I find him very relaxing to listen to. So I just think he's that beautiful mix of ASMR, a library of video games, and And he's great to look at too.
Chris will return. I think he'll be probably hosting next week while I'm off gallivanting.
Oh, lovely.
I think that the Chris Gillian voice thing is so funny, because he's like, when he does his video review voice, it just makes me think of the voice that I had to adopt when I was at the BBC, because they wanted you to have like the Central Scotland, like very generic Glasgow accent, and it couldn't be. My Neddish Paisley twang. It had to be like that kind of almost Gerard Butler, like Grand Theft Auto. It's a game that was made in Scotland. Can you believe that?
That's what I would normally sound like.
Well, this is what I sound like now. You don't know. You never heard me.
I literally can't tell the difference. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always presenting.
When I did my audition for the continuity voice for ITV2, a job that I had for about 6 years, and good God, it was good money, and it died very quickly. But they said, basically, Pete, really ramp up the Northern accent, because we just want someone who sounds stupid. And I'm not proud enough not to take their 200 quid a fucking session. Excuse my language.
Give us a. We're going from The Only Way Is Essex.
It was mainly The Only Way Is Essex. Coming up next on ITV2, The Only Way Is Essex. They're back. Just all that rubbish.
Brilliant. I'd love to do that. I want to be the continuity voice for BBC Scotland. My prediction, the third and final. That's quite a sad one. Bungie will be fully absorbed into PlayStation. Key Bungie staff will leave and go independent. Andy, what do you think? Writing on the wall for the old Bungie. Side note, I think Marathon gets binned.
It's a bit of a sad prediction. I'm not going to sit here and go, yeah, I think they're all going to lose. Like, I don't know. It doesn't feel great now, but they've got a lot of talented guys there. I thought the whole point of getting bought by PlayStation was that you don't have these stupid pressures forcing you to make decisions that are not healthy for your teams. Mm. And yet here we are. It seems ridiculous to me, but they're still super, super talented. Let's see. You know, people usually work their best when the fire's underneath them, when they're not getting fired in the process. So here we go. Let's see how they do. You know, they know the pressure's on for this big expansion.
Well, I really hope I'm wrong. It's just that it was an absolute shit year. So I've can be all sunshine.
Well, I think if you could broaden that out, then yeah, I think there's more shit rolling down the hill for the games industry. Certainly, I don't think it's over nearly at all. I mean, it's capitalism, rampant capitalism, really. But the downside of that is that I don't think we've seen the full repercussions of people, like, you know, tightening their belts and tightening their spend, and that comes for media outlets as well, unfortunately. So I don't think the bad times are over yet, but I hope they are soon.
Bad news, Pete. Your automaton budget is going to get absolutely slashed when we next review it.
Sounds like podcasts. Sounds like the podcast environment.
What do you mean, mate? Everyone had infinite money in 2020 and 2021. Why did that dry up?
Know, right? It was a big bubble. I'll tell you what, the thing that's messed up podcasts is the iOS update. Any podcast that's over about a year old, it's messed everyone up, because what it used to do was, when you pause your subscription and then restarted them, it would download all of the shows that you missed. Now it doesn't do that. It just does a week's worth. And that, for a podcast with a bit of vintage, it really has made it quite difficult.
Well, if anyone from Apple is listening,
yeah,
perhaps they could get to work on
that. Fuck your ideas
that
up. Yeah, help us out, will you? I don't want those Saturday shows.
You're going to introduce a Tuesday show.
Back where we were before.
Every time anyone in the world of football tweets, it's like, right, Brassel, you're going to come in and please, please come in and talk. Pete, your second prediction.
I thought I did.
Third prediction.
Third prediction. Okay, I think that. You remember they, about 2 years ago now, there was that. Decentraland kind of Bitcoin that weird island that they want all of it to live on. I think that's going to happen, but it's going to happen. It's going to be the metaverse's kind of big, you know, project. I think it's going to rise from the flames. Everyone forgot about it, but I think the Decentraland is going to be the hottest IP in video games in 2024, because it's just so alluring, John.
Oh, there's going to be so many deaths when that happens. I saw a thing on TikTok the other day that was like, all the footballers who promoted the NFTs and what they're worth now. And
wonderful. That's absolutely glorious.
Your John Terry's, your Neymar's. I was disappointed to see Heung-Min Son dead one. Like,
did
come
he?
On.
Right,
come
okay.
on, Sonny. You're not even the nice guy. But apparently he deleted it after fan backlash.
I think the bloke from The Darkness did it, had a crack as well, and then instantly got served. And then that was when he was starting his YouTube career. I seem to know.
The Justin Hawkins, is that him? Yeah, I see him on TikTok a lot now. He just listens to music and goes, oh, that's some quite good singing.
Yeah, okay. I bet he makes more money out of YouTube than he ever made from The Darkness, to be honest.
I don't know, mate. That Christmas song probably makes an absolute bank. That's the one.
It's a good one.
Andy, your third and final prediction.
E3 will return.
Oh, Andy!
But it won't be called E3.
It's going to be inside the Video Game Stalker too.
bit of clickbait there for you. anyone who went to Summer Game Fest last year, right? It just felt like a really small E3.
Yeah.
And I've been to the last two, right? So when you really see just how little content there was to go around, like E3 couldn't even put on a show, right? The last couple of years. For obvious reasons. But this year kind of felt like, last year now, 2023, Summer Game Fest, the in-person event, just felt like what I would have expected E3 to be if they put it on. Because there's only so many big games around, right? After the pandemic, there's lots of people, the pandemic forced them to, or encouraged them to stop making pre-release demos. So there's not even fewer people with games who've like got games that you can play or what have you. But it was like a little E3, right? I mean, for people at home, like if you're there, I mean, obviously there's far, far, far fewer people and it's far less international. It's very Western focused. Like it's basically American and British press there. And they're very, very tight for who they invite. But Ubisoft had a press conference on its own show, like outside venue. Square Enix had a huge Final Fantasy event, like offsite. In some like movie studio-esque area. And Xbox had its own event offsite, as it always does, with a press conference. And then obviously you had Jeff's thing, and then you had the kind of the in-person show with Sega are usually there and Capcom are usually there, and Tencent's publisher Level Infinite, and there was good stuff to see. It was small, but it was 2023, right? There wasn't really much to show.
next year, I've no doubt it'll go bigger and there'll be more stuff going on. Xbox have a bigger show. Nintendo have got to do something this year, right? They've got they've got a new console coming out, right?
Got to let us touch it.
Maybe Nintendo put on something. Maybe EA put on something. I mean, EA were at Summer Game Fest as well last year. But what I mean is, like, all this, it didn't feel like, when I was there, I didn't see what changes they made that really, like, warranted killing E3, other than it's not in the LA Convention Center and they don't have to pay unions extortionate fees to build their booths. Otherwise, it was just like E3. And for people at home, for all points and for all purposes, right, people at home, they don't care it's in the same building. And I think once the content gets back to full swing, it's just going to be like a mini E3 again. Like, it's everyone's announcing games in June. They're throwing on their press conferences. Some are in person, some are not in person. The press are out there getting hands-on. They're interviewing the developers. So I'm quite confident that we'll get to a stage where we'll go, well, E3 kind of didn't go away, did it? It just changed into Summer Game Fest.
Yeah. I want to go this year. I'm going to use my Avios and go and sit in Jeff's pool party and punch Jeff Grubb in the face. That's a promise. That is our predictions for 2024. I think there's some good stuff in there. Whoever is right at the end of the year will get a bottle of Pete's homemade truffle Marmite. Can you arrange that, Pete?
Yeah, I'll do. It's basically just smushing mushrooms into normal Marmite.
Nice. What kind of mushrooms? The good stuff?
Just the Waitrose best. Waitrose best.
Ah, of course. God, you've changed. No, I suppose you've always been part of the Wokerati. This is just, you've just really embraced it. Exactly. With your Harvinard white shirts and your clean face.
I've actually got bolognese down the front of the shirt, but you can't see it. So
bolognese?
Bolognese. It's not a special kind of bolognese.
That's what I call it, bolognese.
What's for dinner tonight, darling?
Pete Donaldson's bolognese. Okay, folks, very quickly before we go, because I said I'd read a couple, I'm going to read some predictions from Twitter. I want a yes or no from both of you. Do not elaborate. Chris Scullion, never heard of him, says 1 versus 100 on Xbox.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that's a yes. Confirmed. Courtney says Viva Pinata 3.
No.
Oh god,
they cancelled one of those a few years back.
Hello again, reset era. Jordan Midler will give a game 5 out of 5 on VGC.
Several times.
What's the closest you've ever come for a game that didn't deserve it?
Oh god. That's a whole different podcast.
Don't open that one.
Starfield. A new Banjo-Kazooie?
No.
I love how anytime Banjo-Kazooie comes up in the news, Grant is just like, they're not fucking doing it.
So you should have asked that one with elaboration, because I know for a fact that some of the Activision studios, one of the Activision studios is pitching for a new game. But because he's different, because there's that fella, Nate the Hate, who's the sleuth.
Yeah.
The podcast sleuth, who's seems a lot of times to have really good information. He's insisting that there's a game in development. But certainly, I don't know anything about that. And you can see from what Grant posts that he's very, very doubtful about that. however, someone, an Activision studio pitching a game doesn't really reflect that, because they're just coming in and they won't know what those guys are doing. So you don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like when they had Banjo and Smash, there was like literally like less than a handful of people knew about that outside of Nintendo. Probably maybe more. There'd be people at Microsoft, but certainly at like Rare, only a handful of people knew about that. They're very, very secretive. They're very, very good at that. So I wouldn't put it past them. It'd be disappointing if none of the original guys are involved, right? But I guess they're determined to do that as well.
Joraptor with some of our final predictions. Joraptor, big ass content creator. Come on this show, Jor. You've got nearly 1 million subscribers. Come on, we need your hype. PlayStation Pro is $600 in 2024. Yes or no?
That seems a little high, surely.
Yes. I'm going for yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Woo!
What's the current one? 450.
Well, it's cheaper than that, isn't it?
I mean, it's 450, right? And then how much is the bloody PSVR2?
A billion. To be fair, Google is useless. See, if you searched for a product that you're trying to buy, the top 10 results are always like, oh, here it is on StockX for £1 billion. yes, it's about that. So yeah, maybe 600 squid. And this is an interesting one. Early access for AAA becomes the norm, yes or no?
I think it's already become the norm. What's the last game? What's the last game that didn't have a 100 quid version that you play a week early? Or is that not what you're talking about?
I think he means more traditional early access, like
Disc on a Magazine.
Like, something like Disc on a Magazine, like something like Baldur's Gate 3, that was an early access. Well,
it works for certain type of games, right? Yeah. Like early access for Star Wars Jedi Survivor is shit. Right, you're just playing a not finished game.
Play the first level, yeah, brilliant.
So it works. It's always worked as well. I mean, you go back 10 years; that's been the thing. Like, I mean, there's a reason that Baldur's Gate 3's, you know, been winning so many Game of the Year awards because they were able to build it with their community's help, but also build a community while they're making a game. So they come out and they're a huge success on day one.
Yeah. Is that not just that not kind of ruin the story though for people? I guess if you
yeah, seems like I think with those games, you know? There's so much story in that people don't care. There's like 30,000 endings to that game, so they're like, ah, we'll just do it again. It works perfectly for roguelikes. See, in Hades 2, the games are going to play a million times. It's made for that. Okay, thank you to everyone who contributed. If you could go on your podcast platform of choice, leave a review for this show, screenshot it, send it to me at Jordan Midler on Twitter, and I'll give out some game codes. Not to everyone, not to every single one. I'm not made of codes, but some people will get codes, okay? And it'll be for proper games, not your shite, not your 5 random Steam games, crap. VGC_news on TikTok, just search us on YouTube and wade through all the competitive Pokemon. This t-shirt I'm wearing, courtesy of Gambit Gaming. You can use code VGC for a discount. This Final Fantasy t-shirt was endorsed by Ben Starr, who's a budding actor who you may have heard of from Final Fantasy 16 and other things.
He's a drip king as well. His suits are absolute. His velvet suitage is beautiful.
He's I really hate to say it, but he's a lovely, lovely man. Terrible at Time Crisis. We played Time Crisis over Christmas, and it was absolutely rank rotten. Reviews are happening. I have Prince of Persia. You get a review of that soon. I also have The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered. Review of that at like the mid of the month, the end of the month, something like that, is on my Twitter. Send any comments, questions, and concerns to podcast@videogameschronicle.com. I won't be here next week. I'll be gallivanting. I'm going to Texas. Can't say why. You wouldn't believe me if I told you anyway. Thank you very much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Jordan Midler, Pete at Pete Donaldson, Andy at Andy_VGC. We'd like to thank the great banjo denialist Grant Kirkhope for use of the VGC podcast theme. Say goodbye, Pete.
Ta-da.
Say goodbye, Andy.
Bye.
Welcome back in 2024, and we'll see you next week.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.